welcome to a very special Tiny Plastic People podcast. Or in this case, you could refer to us as the average-sized meaty people, because we're going to talk about a mega game that we done did.
It's us, the fridge people.
You can't say that. I love it.
Cool.
So, joining me today on this podcast is Pete.
Hello.
JD.
Hello.
And Dines.
Puddle of flesh.
Dines. Puddle of flesh. We are all puddles of flesh on this auspicious occasion due to the weather, which we have to now mention because we are in the UK. And
so hot.
British summer.
We have to acknowledge that we're either too hot or too cold. So we have now acknowledged that.
Let's move on. As a people.
Good. So, what on earth is a mega game, and why did we do one?
We did a big old, you may even call like a really mega size game, which is the way I've been describing it to people when they ask me, what are you doing this weekend? I say, I'm going to play Model UN, but with aliens, which I feel basically sums it up. So you. I mean, it's grossly oversimplified, but it's basically pretend to be some people in a large scenario.
It's LARPing for people that like wearing suits instead of armor.
LARPing for people who are into politics.
No weapons. Yeah. But your weapon is your silver tongue.
Mm.
Or, you know, in cards.
And your devious intellect.
And your devious... Yeah, there we go. Your weapon is your mind.
Did anyone else have to explain it to like a workmate or someone who might not know what on earth it is they're doing?
I have recently explained it to somebody that I'm dating, and that
how did that go?
I mean, she was very interested, but I mean that was presumably her humouring me because it was a first date. So
that's bold, but good on you.
I make no apologies. Get the nerdy shit out of the way early. That's what I say.
Amen.
Yeah, no, I think you can make it sound quite exciting with all the wheeling and the dealing and the toing and the throwing.
Once I explain to people what it is we're going to be doing, that I see people like, oh, right, what's that? So who are you then? Are you like France? And I'm like, no, I'm the king of Saudi Arabia. And then it would sort of escalate. People going, what? And then I explain what it is. And then there's going to be aliens come down and I don't know what the hell's going to happen. A lot of people are actually sounding super on board with it.
I explained it to my dad. Because he happened to text me like on the day and just ask what I was up to. And when I explained it to him, I was trying to keep it as like not going off on a tangent as possible. And the responses that I got did come across as very, oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Like,
yeah. So off to play with your friends.
Bit of fun in the sun. Cool. Yeah, that's what it is. It's a glorified game, but with goodness, about 200 people there, weren't there?
Yeah, it was.
Really mega.
Yeah, I guess to just be absolutely clear, we took part in what is called a mega game, and the mega game was called First Contact 2035, which was organised by Very Large Huge Games. And I can't remember who was actually the driver to like get us all into it.
I was Luke, because he was one of the guys organising.
Because he knows the guy that was one of the key runners, I believe.
Yeah.
Nice.
The main facilitator.
Yeah.
And one of the fun things about a mega game is that we all end up assigned roles, and we ended up on... Well, we have two people from each team here. So we already have the King of Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
Pete, who were you?
I was the Supreme Leader of Iran. So just call me the Ayatollah. Yeah.
I did coin the phrase Ayatollah Khomeini, which I didn't end up using on the day because I didn't want to get on too much on Pete's tits.
You could never.
Yeah.
JD, who are you?
I was the foreign minister of Iran, so I was responsible for flying around and going and trying to strike deals with people and convince people to work with us, essentially, which was tricky.
Amazing. And I was the military commander of of Saudi Arabia, which essentially involved me playing an incredibly complex board game while everyone else was running around at the same time.
Hugely complex. Though probably worth mentioning that we did put these, we put the, so that, you know, you may detect there's some perhaps inherent tension between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and that was purposeful. We applied
we generated
as a group
that
and said, yeah, we said, give us something spicy. We're in two teams here. Let's let's not be too far apart. And so they kindly put us on two teams, which are due for a lot of, let's say, country to country interaction.
Local rivals.
Yeah, I feel like if like, so for example, if your team had been, I don't know, Indonesia, and we'd been Brazil, I feel like there wouldn't have been anywhere near as much like fun stuff happening during the day. Well, at least between us.
So, how did you all have to kind of like prepare to get ready for such a massive game, JD?
Mostly, it was just getting through my head the idea of having to actually go and speak to people, because I am not a sociable person. I am not particularly confident when talking to people that I don't know. So yeah, I was just trying to get into that mindset. I mean, I thought my degree would be more helpful than it was. It turned out that you can't really apply an international relations degree to a game. Well, I mean, you could, but it'd be really boring. so yeah, there was a lot more like improvisation that I ended up doing. Like a lot of the things that I sort of planned out ahead of time didn't end up happening, or ended up happening in completely different ways to how I expected.
There's also a shed load. There's about 18,000 pages of rules as well, isn't there?
For me, as foreign minister, my rule book was about 4 pages long. It was mostly like, just go and have a chat with people and try and make deals. That was basically it. Like, I think I had the simplest role on the face of it, in terms of rules, at least. I was the least constrained by, like, mechanics.
I think that was one of the main... It's probably not necessarily like a drawback, but like the way that the game was designed was that each individual role, because as well as the three that we've mentioned, there's also the interior minister for most countries. The way that the game was designed, as far as I could tell from leafing through everything, was there was the three roles that weren't the military commander that were like relatively self-explanatory and not particularly rules heavy. And then the military commander had this like 50-page rule book with a lot of like fairly crunchy rules, as far as I could tell. Like, I didn't take all of it on, but
it wasn't as like, it is like most kind of games that on the surface of it you just kind of look, oh my god, what on earth is all of this sort of stuff? But then you actually realize it's not that complex, and there was always a game runner with you all times, basically, to help you make decisions. So
I got the impression the military commander one, that the billions of pages there is more to do with the breadth of the things you had to handle, not necessarily the depth of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, I guess my point with that is like the breadth of stuff actually had like at least in theory concrete rules surrounding it, whereas obviously like the breadth of what a foreign minister could do is like incredibly wide. Yeah. But most of it is just handled by like talking it out either with the person that you're dealing with or one of the game runners, as opposed to it being like, you have to roll this dice to do this effect sort of thing.
Yeah, so that was something I found throughout the whole game, right? So you got this, it was the way I try and describe the rules. It's kind of not just like, they weren't hard and fast, were they? So they were sort of, they released a sort of like a block of rules at the beginning. And with like guides, and it was a few pages, and they were all quite useful, but they were quite overviewy. And I certainly, as like a leader, the leader of rules pack was basically just like lead.
Okay. It's very general.
I don't know what that means. I haven't done one of these before, but just like guide your team. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Like, you know, all right. The mechanics of that are very loose, and so the way it played out seemed to be, is very heavily GM'd, and it's got the aura of a bit like a. You're a bit like of a tabletop RPG, right? But your military commander is playing the fights of those, which are a little bit more stat driven, but still flexible. And everybody else is improving in a, you know, trying to, with somebody else. And yeah, it was. I was a little confused by that because I went in thinking, well, there's some like definite rules here, and there occasionally would be, right, because you'd have like rules written down on cards that were, and your economy was tracked by a track that you had a token that moved around and you could take actions to improve it. But at the same time, you could do pretty much anything. You go to the games facilitator and like, well, I'm sure we'll come to what we did, but you know, you can do things which are like not, you know, which they hadn't planned for or foreseen. And that was all, I think you were meant to utilize all of those things. I like 100% lost track of what the hell I was doing pretty much immediately. But yeah, it's kind of fast and loose with rules, which are sometimes opaque, sometimes well-defined. It's interesting.
Cool. Well, let's continue introducing it a little bit more as well. So what else was going on with the game? We've already mentioned the fact that, yes, this is a bit of like a model UN, but there were also aliens or Sutin?
Yeah. Yes. We don't speak to them because they're aliens and they live on their own spaceship. So I spoke to aliens maybe like 5 times. That's
beans.
A lie. I did speak to aliens.
We actually spoke with, well, at least I did as Iranian leader, but we actually spoke to one faction of the aliens in particular quite a lot, because they were, I think they landed near us quite early on, and I think we sort of made an executive decision to
engage,
in a sort of diplomatic way instead of
shooting them hostilely down, which is what I had the option of doing. It's like, oh, there's aliens. So aliens would appear on the board and it was just like, do you want to shoot them down? And then you just had the option of saying yes or no, because you'd have to kind of engage them somehow. But you could never engage them and just be like, well, I've sent fighter jets. Can we just wave at them or something? It's just like, nope, you're going to shoot them or you're not going to shoot them.
Can't watch them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was how many people in the country's team, sort of gang, do you think? About 100 maybe?
Yeah, there was the fewest. It was
seemed
the
like a large.
It was the. Yeah. It's probably the majority of players.
The biggest single group, certainly.
So you had sort of like, I don't know, was it 75 to 100 people in countries, let's say, and then the aliens. I got the impression of about, I don't know, 20, 30 of them. Something.
Yeah, the team seemed to be like 2 or 3 people a pop, and there were 7 factions in the end, weren't there?
Yeah. Of aliens, so and then
the aliens weren't everything. There was also there was corporations.
Yeah.
I can't really remember what they were doing.
They were selling us money. Tech. They were trying to sell us tech.
Their objectives were like make money for everyone, and then I think they all had like, you know how we got that sheet that said like, these are your objectives, you have these historical grievances, you'll want to be focusing on doing X, Y, and Z. I think the corporations had that as well, like they might have a rivalry with a corporation in the same industry or that sort of thing, and they're trying to like finish the game ahead of them.
There was a lot of very cyberpunk, as in cyberpunk TM, the sort of corporate things going on. Like, it was fascinating. So like, there's so many things you only hear about like afterwards, after it's happened. So there was the thing where like corporate wet work teams from one corporation carried out like nerve gas attacks under the sort of uniform of another corporation and stuff. It's like proper, it is stuff out of like the fourth corporate war in cyberpunk and things like that. It's really like wild stuff was going on there.
They didn't see a huge amount of that, right? Did we say that it would, whether or not that interacted with you as a country or not, was sort of.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I was about to say. I think a lot of this game, because of how big it was and how like laser focused you are when you're sort of engaging in it, there's so much that you don't see, even on the country level, like because we were on the like Central Asia Middle East map, there was loads of other things that were like happening in the world that just, it really escaped my notice. Mm-hmm. I don't know about the rest of you guys.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't really realize how much of a like an asshole Canada was being.
Well, yeah, I mean, we totally threw our lot in with them without realizing exactly how awful they were until it was too late, really.
That was it. I think that my almost one regret But it wasn't really a regret. It was just that we were, as a military commander, you're incredibly focused on your one table. So you barely mm-hmm. ever leave that table, apart from right. when you get kicked off it for the aliens to essentially take their turn.
Yeah. Yeah. Things do a lot happen to you in the game, don't they? You are presented yeah. with... Like, people come to me like, what's it so the... Let's just take an example. We there are scientists in the game as well, which we briefly mentioned. So they had their own objectives, which is like... doing research into things, helping... I don't really know if they're helping the corporations research stuff. I think they were. And then so we had one chap who... somebody who happened to be based in Saudi Arabia. This, for not really any mechanical benefit, but just happened to go to the... I think it's King Abdullah University. And the... in the game, that is. And the... We said to them, like, we want to go hard on solar energy. We want, like... And he's like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And then we come back and he's like, right, I've researched a way to kill the aliens. And I'm like, what? Like, where's that? And then...
The sun?
Yeah, and then, like, some stuff happens. And then a reporter, because the press are there as well. So, like, a GNN guy comes up to me, like, what do you think about this scientist based in... who says you're funding him to research nuclear weapons to kill the aliens? And I'm like, what? Where's that come from? It's good, but you're like, a lot of these things that happen to you... You know, like, certainly many things happen to you via me, James. I know I would arrive and deliver you just a piece of information with which I had no expectation of what you're going to do with it.
But or a little treat fun. Or something.
A little treat, a little...
So, can I ask, how did you treat James as your, like, military guy? Because the way that I... Because we had Baron from our forums as our... military guy for our team, mm-hmm. and basically every turn he'd come over, and all I would say is, "How much money do you need?"
Yeah, that's kind of what it was.
Give him his pocket money, and then that would kind of be it, unless he really needed to like come over and say, "This is an emergency," or "I need you to buy." Another fighter jet for me.
I'd had an idea of what I'd like James to do, which was basically there are these units called Spec Ops, which is meant to be your sort of like. Sort of special forces-y kind of peoples. And they're touted in... My reading from the book was they were touted as the people you can get to do things and go and, like, secretly blow up stuff and do this. And I was like, wait, well, that, to me, feels like a kind of relevant thing that you might do as the country I was playing, which was, just like, you know, fun. Lots of special ops going, causing mischief around the world. And so I was like, right, James, just do loads of stuff with Spec Ops. And it transpired... that was not particularly possible, so but that was about as far as I'd got with anything, so like I didn't really have much beyond that.
Yeah, it became more possible throughout the game, just as we got a feel for what kind of like role play and things was or like storytelling was almost allowed with your Spec Ops and your units and things. That was that was one of the hardest things to kind of get a handle on, was like how far you could take something or how far you could enact a plan. Because the worst thing about the Spec Ops was that you would have to literally put them onto other people's maps and they would see you doing
it. Quite obvious then.
So it was incredibly obvious. Like, it was just like, oh, I've put a load of Spec Ops there. And it was just like, why? I was like, well, you know, I'm just going to mess some stuff up. Or if you like. But like, they'd know exactly who did it.
Is it like in tabletop RPGs where you can, you know, a lot of the point of those is to improv, but also by the same token, there are limits, right? You can't be like, I'm going to jump to the moon. Well, no. Like, so you're kind of in an RPG, maybe you find, you know, with a new group, you would spend a first session or whatever finding where that line is of what you can work it out. And I don't want to let capital P problem, but the problem in this is where you've got turns, you've got limited numbers, and you are time bound. So you're spending the first few of those turns, perhaps working out where that line is. And maybe that's okay. Maybe that's just how it goes.
I think that it's just how it goes, really, with that many people in a room. And also, we haven't really mentioned, but we did say that like there's facilitators and GMs involved as well. So there was a whole team of people provided by the lovely people who organized the event, who some were mechanical like runners, some were like narrative runners. And then there was like an administration team who was kind of like keeping on top of everything else. So
there's probably about 20, 30 people just for admin, right?
Yeah. So each table, so there were several tables. I think there were four or five tables, which were just the countries. And then there was the tables downstairs as well. And each one of them had a facilitator. And that facilitator was basically championing everyone along to say, come on, you got to do this right now. You got to put those spec ops over there. Are you done moving? Are you done moving? Great. Okay. Now we're going to like shoot the aliens, etc. So that was really important.
Brutally efficient.
And they had to be, because like the turns, like you also said, were like 45 minutes long. And in that 45 minutes, everything which, that had to happen would have to happen. And there's a big timer on the wall. So,
I found that, because the time limitation was very much like I was constantly running around. There wasn't that much time that I spent standing still or sitting down or not thinking. But I think because you become so laser focused on what you're trying to do in that moment, you can miss the possibility space. I think me and Pete talked about this a while ago. There was one action that Saudi Arabia took during the game, which was to sneak chemical weapons with the help of the Israelis into the Iranian desert and then tattle on us to the UN. So
don't know what you're talking
I think
about,
it was, it was like right at the start of, I think it was like turn three or four, I had a representative from the UN just come over and say, can you come to the UN Security Council, please? And I was like, oh shit, okay, right, fine. And then, but then we had previously seen you talking a lot with the Israelis, and then it was explained, oh, we found chemical weapons near Hormuz. And I was like, okay, well, they're not ours. So I went to the UN and I thought it was a great moment genuinely, because I had to think on my feet and think, right, how am I going to explain this, because they don't trust us. And I thought, I can't just go in there like a child and go, it was Saudi Arabia who did it, it wasn't us, it was them. So what I ended up doing is I just sort of came up with, right, okay, this is like, this stockpile is a little holdover from the Iran-Iraq war. We were in the process of, you know, decommissioning all of the weaponry and stuff from that conflict. And obviously with one thing and another, aliens arriving, trying to deal with sabotage from Saudi Arabia and Israel, it's sort of fallen by the wayside a little bit. And they fully bought it. And they were just like, right, fair enough. But then they said, would you be happy to then have a UN team come in and decommission it for you? And I said, yep, we've got nothing to hide. We weren't building the nuclear program, nothing.
At that point,
we were squeaky clean at that point.
Well, that's the other thing, because one of our objectives and the way that Iran starts the game is that you've got this sort of nascent nuclear program that a lot of other nations of the world don't want to like finish. And we made the decision very early on that we weren't going to bother with it because it seemed a bit risky. And then also, A little bit after we'd come to that decision, we'd started funding research into alien, like, we kept referring to them as mega nukes, like weapons that were even more powerful than nuclear weapons. We could say fully honestly that we were not developing nuclear weapons.
So, the broader point I was making with the action that Saudi Arabia definitely did do to us is that, I think the sort of, not failure, but the thing we had on our team was that I think we hadn't quite grokked the possibility space or the sort of things we could do until like relatively late in the game. That's not necessarily,
I'm not saying
that's a failure of the game at all, but I think it's more of a failure of imagination.
I'm not like a natural improv guy, and I think maybe some other people are better at that, being a bit more spontaneous.
Yeah, and also like about that play, which we did definitely not do with Israel, was that it took us two turns to even plan how that would work with the facilitator, because we didn't know what we could do. Because first of all, we got given Dine's got some beautiful like nerve gas, and I was just like, well, I'm not going to use this on the board because it would be a war crime. And the facilitator agreed.
Never like, do
if,
that.
If I used it, it would be a war crime. People might get upset. So my first idea was we had a big situation going on in Kashmir. And Was it Kashmir? It might have been Kashmir. Anyway, everything was going to shit.
It was popping off over there for quite a long time.
India and Pakistan were basically at odds against each other for some reason. And there was also like refugees, the UN was involved, things like that. So what my initial plan had been was we were going to use our special forces to set off the nerve gas in Kashmir and then blame Iran. And then we were going to hold a charity concert to make everyone like us.
We had a card that was a charity. I don't know where. A charity fundraiser, right?
No, it was a charity concert. It was like a live
aid. Specifically.
But I thought it like if setting off this horrible nerve agent would like get rid of all of the army. But the guy was like, no, it's only going to take one hit point off everything in that area. And the UN's there. And, you know, this is going to require several dice rolls to even start off. And I was like, oh. So then we came up with the idea of, I mean, we might have came up with the idea of working with the Israelis to essentially use their dice rolls and our dice rolls to go into Iran dressed as Egyptians for some reason,
yeah.
To blame it on them. And
I think Israel didn't like Egypt. And we're just Egyptians. We're like, yeah,
let's do that. So and that was how we got that plan together. And then we did some like good dice rolls, but we didn't do great dice rolls, which meant that like nothing kind of worked out. But that was like the first time we had like a proper plan together of like, oh, how do we get them? But then it turned out that you could actually just move your special forces into a country and say they're going to cause mischief and then just cause riots. But we didn't know we could do that. So.
The other thing that was happening on the Saudi Arabian team was DC and Ev were off being interior and foreign ministers, and just coming back and telling me things that they'd bought and things that they'd done. I've got this alien breathing apparatus. Like, I feel like my interior minister and foreign minister, they had their own arcs of story that happened in this game. Basically, we started off trying to fund solar panel research to turn the entire Arabian Peninsula into a solar farm. And everyone's like, yep, good idea. And then it would come back like, right, I bought nerve gas. Like, not, what? They don't marry up. I bought alien respirators. Right? Yeah. Luke did a very good job setting up alien respirators with a secret kill switch, which if activated, would have killed the aliens. Because we learned reasonably early on, somebody sold us a dossier of information. Can't remember who it was that we managed to buy.
Did we get this as well?
That said that aliens couldn't breathe our atmosphere.
Oh no!
Yeah, and so we sold that to China for a load of megabucks. That was good fun.
after shout out to Beth, who is our interior minister, who. So me and her traveled together to get to the event, and she was very, very nervous, like especially in the couple of days building up to the event, really, really nervous and anxious about, you know, meeting new people and then having to go off and negotiate these deals with corporations and scientists without me being there. And she did a really good job. Like the
challenge.
The mega nuke that Pete described was absolutely 100% spearheaded by her, which made it all the more tragic that the game ended literally seconds before we got to launch it.
And who were you going to launch it at?
The Israelis
retaliate against Israel.
The Israelis
they were on the
hiding,
moon by that point.
They were hiding on the alien mothership, apparently. So we were going to launch it directly at that.
No, they got off the mothership onto the moon.
Oh, well, yeah, whatever. We're going to launch it at the Israelis, basically.
But the bigger tragedy from my specific personal perspective.
This is going too far into spoilers before get through.
Good point.
Let's tell it almost as like a narrative. So, like, once we got past like those early shenanigans and things, were there anything like in the mid game? Like you mentioned, like that there's a lot of like misinformation and stuff started going around.
I think there was like three main threads to our like mid game. So one was trying to get Swift access for Iran. So the way that it simulates like Iran being under sanctions and stuff in real life by a lot of Western countries was this sort of it's almost like a diplomatic mini game. And I think you spent a lot of time on this, JD, where we had to get in order to sort of gain an economic boost to our country, we had to get the approval of five other like neutral countries to let us into the SWIFT banking system. And one of the very first things that we did, as per your suggestion, JD, was go to Venezuela, who also had this objective, and basically agree to work together and cooperate on it instead of trying to compete for the same country's votes. And I think that ended up taking us quite a while, because some countries, I think, wanted to like get more for their SWIFT access than we wanted to give them, or, you know, just sort of hold it back for their own advantage.
Yes. So for example, Pakistan was our next door neighbor, but on the tables, and was also listed as one of our allies. So, and they had a SWIFT card to give. So immediately I went to them. Well, after going to the Venezuelans, who were just as enthusiastic about cooperating as we were, which was great. But I went to Pakistan and said, look, here's the deal. Let's have some cooperation and some solidarity between our countries. We're historical allies. We've got a lot that we can offer you. But we want to get back into the SWIFT system. And they immediately were like, no, because they were so scared of the Americans straight away that they didn't want to
antagonize
them.
They were also allied with.
Yeah, they didn't want to antagonize the Americans, which I understand, but also it really screwed us. Like, we didn't get our first SWIFT card until like turn three, because Venezuela got one off Mexico and they'd already got their five. So they just gave it to us. and honestly, I'll say as well, like, without the Venezuelan team, we would never have done half of what we did. Mm. Like, they were brilliant. Like, they were true friends to us right from the start all the way to the end, basically.
Global pariahs.
Yeah. I feel like we had Israel, who were just being, like, absolute poker face. We did not know what they were actually up to half the time.
I had no idea the whole time. No clue.
And, like, I guess during the mid-game, what happened with us was we kind of ended... Well, on the military table, is that through some... Maybe I even misunderstood it, but through some kind of shaky alliance, I ended up going to war with India for a bit.
by accident, right? We forgot to declare war on them and just started shooting.
In defense
of Pakistan, if I remember correctly.
In defense of Pakistan, like, we'd made, like, an alliance. Like, Pakistan... as I understood it, was our allies, and they were getting absolutely battered. So I thought, oh, we've probably got enough, you know, naval power and military power to kind of at least kind
help
of
out.
drive a bit of a, yeah, make it so that Pakistan are not getting, like, annihilated. And instead, what happened was that I sent some boats into the sea, and they came back incredibly damaged. So I immediately, like, started saying, "Are you sure you want to be at war with us?" So
yeah,
and
and then we took a massive economic hit as well, because we forgot to declare war and just started shooting.
Yeah. So
is that what happens?
Yeah. Yes, it turns out.
Yeah.
Funnily enough,
kind of forgot about that.
Our economic sort of situation just went from strength to strength, because we started on, was it 30 GDP? Yeah. And we ended on 70 or 80 or something.
Yeah, I completely beefed. I was like, I don't really, the mid game for me was just, I was a lot of stood around waiting for people to tell me just to give hand money out. I wasn't entirely sure what I was I was doing in the middle. I'd get money and then it would just, I'd just throw it at people, how much do you want? And then because like I say, Luke and Ever were off doing interesting things.
Wheeling and dealing.
Ever would periodically come back and report on the progress of solar panels, which never really went anywhere.
We never really got our solar panels, like, sorted.
Well, no, we declared it, and like, everyone was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, nobody really cared in the end. That was the sad thing.
Yeah.
And I guess on the military board as well, like, there were always, like, events happening on the board. So there was always, like, there was, like, flooding and climate change and, you know, general bad stuff going on. So what could happen was that if you just didn't, a bit like pandemic, where if something bad goes on for too long in a place, that place becomes a failed state and causes more, like, refugees and more, like, chaos
impacts
and things. And what I felt was starting to happen was that people started ignoring those things on the board in favor of their goals, or, like, their, like, country's aliens. Goals or aliens.
We were trying to be very responsible about that, I'll have you know. So
I mean, I was as well. I held a charity
concert. No blame here.
But it turned out that Yemen was in entirely just like under alien control by the time I figured out something. yeah. But yeah, it felt like
maybe they saved them from the Saudis.
Yeah.
Well, we not were, in the end.
We were trying to like eventually they go like towards the end of the game. It was like, oh, we should have been working together on these problems, but the dossiers which we were given at the start were just like, they are not your allies, they're assholes, go and get them. So there was that always negotiation with people, like you didn't quite know what story they were playing out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there was this other mid-game thread of the Islamic Community of Nations, wasn't there? Which was, I think, is that spearheaded by Indonesia?
Right? Yeah,
yeah. So that chat was really pushing that.
Indonesia came to me to talk about it, to sort of gauge interest. And to be fair, I'd had in my head a similar idea of like forming a new, like basically forming like an Islamic NATO. So straight away when he came to me, obviously I talked to you first, Pete, and then when you agreed, I said, yep, we're fully in, we're into it, you know, we'll attend the meeting and all this kind of stuff. And then we had this big meeting. So it was the head of state. It was basically all of them were heads of state except for me, because Pete was busy. So I went to the first meeting in his place, and it was where they signed the constitution and agreed on how it was all going to be run and all this and like whatever. Really good. And then that went quite well for a while, but then one thread that I was particularly like putting a lot of effort into alongside the Swift stuff was one of our objectives was to try and get a permanent seat just get a seat on the UN Security Council. So I'd been laying I'd been spinning webs to try and sort that out from the beginning, and then like just occasionally going over and seeing how that was going. So I tried to talk to the Russians about it, and they were just not interested at all. They straight up said, we don't want anyone else to have, we don't want to have any more like diffusion of power in the UN Security Council. So I went to China instead, and they were well up for it. they were like, you know, they were very keen to sort of help us sort that out, especially when I explained, you know, let's have a counterweight to Western hegemony. That ended up all changing because of, I think, an event that happened in the mid-game was that the UN basically became a new thing. There was, like, the UN Security Council essentially ended up becoming the global full-on security forces. And they admitted,
anti-alien alliance.
To fight, form a bulwark against the aliens. And then especially offensive to us was that the Israelis were essentially one of the leading members of it. So at that point,
I was like, Israelis.
You know, you ended up in that, right?
No,
we weren't supposed to.
We from the start, we were like, no, we're not part of this. We are not. We are looking for an exit as soon as possible. So we did.
So a weird mid game thing that I found out was because we were like, well. Because I remember saying to the Islamic Council, we should get in on that alliance thing, and then everyone was like, yeah. And then I think America were like, well, okay, if you get the signatures of everybody else on it, then you can join as like a singular, because our argument was that, like, well, the Islamic League of Nations counts as a nuclear power because Pakistan has nuclear weapons, so together, kind of like a nuclear power. And they're like, okay, we can get the signatures of the other lot, and then you can join the alliance. And so we did. And then nothing really came of it, except I got to be part of a conspiratorial plan, I think spearheaded by China, in this anti-alien alliance, to give the aliens respirators with kill switches in them, which Luke had been developing in the background, unbeknownst to me. But we had to get the aliens to put the respirators on. And then we realized, well, we could only get some of them to do it, and then we'd only kill some of them, and then it would be a bit awkward.
I think where we stood with that was because we had a bit of a hard tack to another sort of plan sort of later in the mid game, because you guys were all pushing towards the UN Security Council, and we wanted to get in on that, and then we didn't because there was another alliance brewing of people who were slightly less anti-alien, and by this point we had one of the alien factions called the Harmonists, we'd agreed to let them base themselves in our country. So we weren't quite as hostile to the aliens as some were.
I don't think I even was. I just got sort of dragged into this plan, and I'm told, right, yeah, we're going to kill the... Right, okay, cool. By the end, we did not, but...
So there was a few other countries that were sort of making hushed overtures to us. So I think Venezuela and Canada were the big movers and shakers of this, but there were some others, Germany, Brazil...
Argentina.
I think Algeria was, but then became less enthusiastic as time went on. But basically, I think we may have been in the UN Security Council for a minute, because that happened, and then soon after we declared that we were out of the sort of Islamic Community of Nations in favour of this new alliance. And it was quite annoying, actually, because we had this little WhatsApp group that never really got used for that group. Yeah. And I wanted to say in one of the like head of state meetings, we're out, you should follow us to this new alliance that isn't so anti-alien, but I never got the chance because I'd like turned away at the end of one of the meetings and then turned back and half of them were gone. So I thought, well, this isn't going to make an impact. Aww. So I wrote a little message on the WhatsApp, and then literally nobody responded to it. So it was a huge damp squib in the end.
One thing that I found is that like, so the at the beginning of the game, it was all quite, there's this weird snowball effect. So the first like turn or two were actually pretty slow from our perspective, like not much happened. It was a case of like going and just laying the groundwork for a lot of these deals that we're going to try and make. And then towards the end of the mid game, events just picked up so fast and everything started happening so quickly that I couldn't keep up with what was happening. Yeah. Especially, so I ended up missing a whole bunch. So one thing that the foreign ministers had to do was, in fact, we were so busy we missed the Olympics. We didn't enter anything into the Olympics because we were just busy.
No, looks like we wouldn't have been able to compete with Venezuela, to be fair. They won like a million medals.
Yeah. So the one thing that foreign ministers had to do was vote on UN resolutions. So originally that was supposed to be done via the app Slido, which is like the voting app thing that you enter a room or whatever, and it'll give you the poll and then you whatever. So I did the first few of those, and then through no fault of anybody there on the days, just the tech solution just stopped working. Like the Slido was just, I don't know why, it just wasn't performing at all. So they changed it to like in-person voting. So there was like a... outside the country room, there was like a staircase. So what happened was, a facilitator or the UN person would stand on the stairs and sort of explain what the resolution was, and then you'd all just raise your hands to vote or to say yes, no, or abstain. Mm. And I ended up, towards the end game, I just stopped going because I was just far too busy going backwards and forwards between Canada, Venezuela, Algeria, Pete, Beth. Like just trying to sort everything out and try and keep a lid on events as they unfolded. But I remember the thing that made me convinced we shouldn't be part of this UN Security Council anti-alien thing was that we had there was a vote. I can't remember if it was the vote on whether to form it or not or something about it. And I saw Luke there. It was the only time I sort of really saw Luke during the day was at these votes. When they said, "Oh, you know, who's for it?" I just saw him put his hand straight up, and I was like, "No, no, that is, we are not
the opposite.
We are voting against this because the Saudis are in favour of it."
Yeah.
I actually get like I was starting to think about what was happening in that mid game bit, and we on the like military side of things, there was just so much stuff going on that everything was basically a stalemate. And the only thing that was really happening was that me and Baron were basically playing this game of you had to spread your influence, and the only way to do that was to you had to play more influence into a place than someone else. So every time it came around to the influence turn, part of the turn, you would just sit there and you would wait for someone with your big fist full of influence, which you bought by spending all of Dimes' money, and you would just say, They go 3-2-1, and then you just put as much influence down on a place as you wanted to do as possible. But it cost us the same amount every turn to do that, and you were doing it against someone else. So we were sat there, like, doing that to each other for ages, and it was just getting kind of annoying at the end. It was just like, okay, well, you want to take that from me, but I can see you've just put more on, so I'm just going to put more on in front of you. And then at the same time, I had Turkey just being a little jerk and just coming in at the side and just like taking other territories from us. Because like one of our goals was supposed to be like the big daddies of the Middle East. But to maintain,
we managed to successfully take that off.
Yeah, because that was one of our hidden objectives was take that card, that dominant nation Middle East card from Saudi Arabia, and be essentially shift that balance of power in our own favor. And I think, to be fair, we seem to do that very early and with very little fuss. It just sort of,
the thing is, it was quite,
Baron came over, just gave us the card and was like, yeah, we're the dominant nation in the Middle East.
it happened in various turns because it was like checked at like 3 points out of the game or something. And I remember thinking that it would be reasonably easy for us to hold on to because we were maybe couldn't have been too hard because we were, I understood that we started with it, so we should have, I thought we were going to be starting with alliances with loads of people, and that you won the stalemates if you're allied, so we should just be able to sort of stalemate everybody and maintain it. But like James said, it was a weird game of like, well, I go, you go, I go, you go.
Like bidding war.
Yeah,
bidding, and then it's...
Because also we didn't have any to start with, so you immediately had to spend loads of money.
Yeah, and that's literally the opposite.
And I didn't
of what
really
I thought
know
it was
what
gonna be.
I was doing. I was like, okay, well, I'm going to spend some money.
Yeah, you had
here,
so much other stuff to do as well.
It's like, okay, well, you know, we've got influence in Qatar, so maybe that's good. Yeah, yeah. And then that meant nothing.
The military leader's so loaded up with stuff to do. It was crazy.
It was, realizing that, I think I was like saying that we really should have been using a military power to not be shooting at each other to actually resolve crises was like, oh, that's what all that's for, and that's why we should be over there doing those things and stuff. So, like,
oh, what, sending the military in to calm people down?
Yeah, like doing like calming crowds, but it was really hard to calm crowds as well, so without anyone else's support. It worked when us, Israel, and the wily Turkey were like working together to like solve things in our area, but then that meant that you couldn't play the influence game on any other countries because there was no benefit to it. So it
maybe
was...
that's how we came out ahead then.
I mean, it probably came out ahead because I just didn't see half the board either because I was on one corner and I just didn't look on the other side. I just thought I'd let Kashmir get along with it. So let's get a little bit into the kind of chaos that occurred towards the end of the game. Aliens, turns out, started making a big fuss. And I can't remember what that fuss was.
Some of them decided to land a load of terraforming towers in Canada and some other places. And then there were rumblings that perhaps they weren't very good. And a couple of them... A couple of the alien factions turned out to be evil.
There was something like implanting things in cows.
That's news to me. I heard that they were trying to implant things in people.
I hadn't heard that.
And but it was quite funny because at this point, Ev and Luke's plotting sort of started to come together because they were like, right. Ev turned up at some point with, right, we can grow soybeans now. In alien atmosphere, not just generally, but in alien atmosphere. And then Luke was like, right, it turns out we've also got these respirators, we can now actually breathe alien atmosphere. We acquired somebody from the UK came to Saudi Arabia and was like, do you want to buy a nuclear bomb? So obviously I said yes, but it was broken, so he had to go away. He came back and said, right, I fixed it, do you want to buy it now? And I did. I was like, yes, I will. So I just ran over to the military table and said to James, we've got a nuclear bomb now, so enjoy that. It was just a warhead. It wasn't anything on it. But then we also had rockets to get people in. We had a fledgling space program. So we had that. We were thinking about putting the nuke on there, and I don't know what we're going to do with it, but we wanted to try it out. And then I started talking to the aliens a lot more because I at this point I was kind of a bit like, I don't really know what's going on. I'm just going to sort of be a wild card. And I was said to the aliens, like, what do you want? Do you want stuff? And they were just like, yeah, we'll just take anything you got, really. So I said, what about political prisoners? They were like, yeah, sure. So I sold them our political prisoners in exchange for, I think, a hit on an Israeli satellite. Because I was worried about Israeli nuclear bombs. I don't know why. So I did
because they were wild cards as well.
Yeah, and they just didn't do anything. They didn't really do anything. And then I was like, oh, by the way, do you want some political prisoners? And then they just, so nobody cared about Solar Farm. We made an announcement on the press, but it was too busy. Everybody cared about these supposed aliens. So, okay, fine. Then the aliens were like, well, we got mechs as well. Yeah. So nobody cared about solar farms. So instead, the end game accelerated rapidly to us just going, well, fuck it. Well, nobody wants to pay attention to us. We'll just live with the aliens then. So we just gave Saudi Arabia to the aliens. Because we're like, well, fuck it. We can live. We can just survive. We'll just farm soybeans and breathe their atmosphere. It's fine. We got rid of our political prisoners, so there's no problems there.
The last thing that happened on our map was just like a guy came over and deployed so many units from one of the alien races just on Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, he was like the Canada guy as well. Like, so I went to speak to Canada, who was extremely enthusiastic, and I was like, I think maybe we should join the aliens. And he was like, yeah, just do it. It's great fun. Just join aliens. Just let them come down. They're really chill. Turns out this may have been a lie, but I don't care. It was really funny. So I was like, yeah, fuck it, let's do it. Just invited him down wholesale into Saudi Arabia with Canada.
Do you know which thrilled. Alien faction came to you guys?
Like some guys in like brown shirts. I can't remember.
But do you know the name?
No.
Okay, interesting.
But then the alien guy was like, yeah, we got mechs. We got like mech robot people. We can use them if you want. And I was like, yes, please, just give them. It'd be really funny.
I was going to say, at the same time, we had some... there was tensions hotting up between Russia, for some reason, and the US, I believe. And other places.
Oh God, yeah.
So
for some reason.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that was going on, even though it was nearby, that was going on a whole world away. We just suddenly get this announcement.
Well, so around the mid game, I think the Russians, I can't remember why, there was a justification for it that they had. But they basically ended up invading Eastern Europe and then Romania and then pushing into Western Europe. So it was a whole thing. It was proper, like, you know, Cold War gone hot stuff.
Yeah.
It's all out of, you know, Tom Clancy's fever dreams. And yeah, so that was going on for quite a while. Then there was also that whole, I've just remembered, that whole invasion of Korea thing where,
God, yeah.
So the Americans and the South Koreans crossed the 38th parallel.
That's right.
And attacked North Korea and just conquered it. And that was it. Reunified Korea, which obviously pissed the Chinese off. There was all these things going on with the major players, and I'm actually really pleased that we weren't major players in that way. Like, it's just fascinating to see that stuff happen and know that, like, okay, this has no real, like, this doesn't involve us, but it's just fascinating to watch it happen. Like,
it was fun to know that it was going on, but it's probably worth mentioning, like, the Russian team, Chinese, maybe Chinese, and the American teams were way bigger, right? They were like eight people.
Six to eight people, yeah.
Yeah, much bigger. Because they had presence, like, on every board, everywhere. They had, like, multiple ministers for doing different things and multiple military commanders and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it was a bit weird every now and then that just like someone from America would just walk over to our board and just kind of move stuff around. And I kind of felt that they weren't particularly engaged with like our board at all, really. That was something
quite a commentary on American foreign policy, maybe.
Oh, you never know. I had like British units next to me for ages until one turn like the military commander from the UK came along and I said, you know, you got some units there, and he went, oh, I'll have those back.
Forgot about them.
So
dear.
So
our end game was quite well. We had two major things happen. First of which was there was a point near the end where the Canadians, who are now our allies, they had like some sort of alien armada descend on them. And obviously, the first thing I did was go over and said, "Well, what can we do to help you?" And I think you had this as well, JD, where they were just like, "Don't need any help. We're fine." Don't worry about it.
So basically, what happened at the end, like at some point in every turn, there would be a news broadcast because there was a team in the game who were journalists, and then there was about six of them, and they'd occasionally come around and ask you for, you know, interviews and stuff. So I was a bit sad because I gave an interview to to GNN. They didn't end up getting used, and I gave some awesome like quotes, some, you know, rain fire on the non-believers, etc. It's proper good stuff. So they're doing news bulletin where they give you the events, like the major events that have been happening and like corporate espionage and things like that. And there was this bit where in the news they said, oh, alien ships have descended on Canada. And I'd looked over and just saw the Canadian team and they all just went, woo, and started waving their arms around. And I was a bit baffled by that, given that I'd negotiated this entire fucking alliance with like Canada and Venezuela and stuff, and responsible for persuading Pete to commit to it. And I was like, so I went over immediately to go and talk to the Canadians, like, what's the deal? What's going on here?
Did you find out in, what happened in the end, right?
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. They were just in league. They just chose an alien faction at the beginning and then just completely buddied up to 100%. That regardless of whether it's the good aliens or not, they just were like, yeah, we're just going with them. They seem nice. They were just, what were they? They were trying to be like nice bad guys.
Yeah, basically. I mean, to be
polite,
fair,
bad
true,
guys.
True wild guys.
So the whole alliance with Canada thing was fascinating because, so I went over and Canada was one of the countries that had a Swift card, and they had, I think they ended up giving us our fourth, so penultimate Swift card that we needed. But I was talking to them about it, and so it was actually, it was Venezuela that said, oh, the Canadians, you know, would be interested in talking to you. So I went over to the Canadians and had a chat with them, and they said, look, we're forming this other counterweight to the Anti-Alien Security Council. So currently it's us, Germany, Argentina, Venezuela, and Algeria. And there was this whole series of like clandestine meetings because so that the building that we were in was, I can't remember what it's called, but it's in Camden. But it had this big garden at the back. And I spent a lot of time in that garden just having like diplomatic meetings in between cigarettes and stuff. So there was this whole series of clandestine meetings out in that garden where it was, you know, me, the Canadians, the Venezuelans, the Algerians, all just like coming to sort of figuring out the terms of this alliance and how it all works and all that kind of stuff. I was fairly convinced by it all because I thought, well, yeah, we're against the Security Council. We're not anti-alien. And also the fact that the Israelis are such a big part of it, we're not happy about. Just then to have it all turned around as like, oh, the Canadians are on the alien team the whole time. It was just very strange. They gave us that Swift card in return for us joining. And then I think we got our final one from, Indonesia. I engineered that and then betrayed them immediately. As soon as we had the card off them, we then, that was when we did our public, we are leaving the Islamic Council of Nations and joining this new alliance with Canada and stuff.
We're leaving. Does anyone care? Hello, is this thing on?
Yeah, I think we really did think it was going to have much more of an impact than it did.
But we thought it was dramatic. Yeah.
It's that scene in The Thick of It where Glenn storms off and they go, should we get him back? No.
So the second sort of... and this was the very end of the game for us, and me most especially, after the sort of fallout of Russia and America nuking each other at the end of the game, somebody came over to our table and then afterwards to me and said, they've nuked Tehran, you're dead.
Well, that was the thing, was that we knew that Pakistan had launched nuclear weapons. We didn't know who they had actually launched them at. But then also, we knew that someone else had launched a nuclear weapon. And it was just like, well, do you want to intercept it? And then it was just like, well, I had like all these cards that said I could intercept a nuclear weapon. And it was like... If they're aimed at us, we're screwed. But all these aliens have just appeared in Saudi Arabia, so I'm not going to play any of these cards. And then this big nuclear explosion just appeared in Iran. I was like, well...
Also, there was a bit of confusion with that, because so this mega nuke that we'd got off the... I think it was the Chinese Science Institute or whatever. So either the scientist hadn't explained it properly... or Beth had just missed the bit where he explained it. like, well explained one of the key functions of it that would have been really useful. So one of the key functions of it was, so beyond it being like more powerful than a conventional nuclear weapon, and it not actually being nuclear, it was like thermobaric or whatever. Beyond all that, it could be used to intercept nukes. It could shoot other nukes out of the sky because of the explosion it creates, or what, I don't know, some science bullshit. but basically, that we didn't realize that it could do that. So we could have avoided getting nuked. We could have avoided the destruction of Tehran, at least. So then I get told by one of the facilitators that I am now the head of state of Iran, because I would have been out of the country at the time on diplomatic business. So I then formed a succession government in Hormuz. And then I was there saying, right. So there was me, Beth, and Baron all stood with one of these facilitators saying, okay, we've got this experimental nuke, this mega nuke. Let's launch it. Like, let's launch it at the Israelis. Let's retaliate. And then the game just ended. It was just like, okay, so we didn't get to launch it. And there was a whole debate that happened.
It was the Israelis that had, like, nuked you from the moon, right?
Yes, that's right. They decamped from Jerusalem to Luna, I guess.
They so, pretty much peaced out, went into space, and then dropped a nuke on you.
there was this
whole thing as well, because the facilitator who we said, right, let's launch our special nuke, was saying, okay, because of the amount of nukes that have already been launched, there's a good chance that this will tip the balance, and the world will go into, you know, nuclear winter, essentially. Like, this could end the world. And I said, no, just fire it. Just fire it. Doesn't matter at all.
Don't give a shit.
And the final thing I said before the game ended was, rain fire on the non-believers. And then the game ended, and that was it.
I think what had happened, like, towards the end was, just because nuclear war had occurred, every table was just like in disarray at that point. Like, there was just no cohesion to everything. And I think they made the right call of just like going, standing up on stage and just like going, and that's the end of the end of the world, it seems. Looks like you destroyed it all.
So Saudi Arabia ended up completely under the control of aliens.
But we could breathe their air.
We can breathe the air. We can grow their food. I mean, it wouldn't matter, because they'd have implanted us with weird parasites and turned us into like mind slaves, or whatever. But and then Iran ended in nuclear hellfire. So,
well, see, but sort of
in a great economic condition.
Only the capital ended in nuclear hellfire. So
sorry, okay, an irradiated wasteland apart from the capital, which was the fireball.
So my succession government, probably, like, in my head, what I thought of was, then how would this have then gone? How would I have then, as the new supreme leader, how would I have resolved all this? And I thought, well, probably what I would have done is I would have then just used that military to annex Iraq. Take some territory from, you know,
worked so well last time.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, but well, this time we would be the aggressors.
Hooray.
Weird, like, because there's a lot of places that were kind of untouched. So the map of America, I saw a photo afterwards of like the map of the United States, and it was just covered in like little orange mushroom cloud markers. Like, the US was just gone. China actually came out of it okay, sort of. Like, they lost Shanghai. Russia was completely destroyed. You just end up with these weird things, like Indonesia and Venezuela are now the new superpowers.
So
we ended in nuclear holocaust, basically, but not quite, just about, with aliens just implanting people all over the place. So was there like one highlight to go around, like, from your game? So, Pete?
I mean, this is such a cliche thing to say, but I just think doing it for the first time and getting to experience it, because I'd always wanted to do one of these ever since I saw the old Shut Up and Sit Down videos that they did earlier iterations of this game years and years and years ago. And finally getting to do it, and, you know, even if there's a bit of like not really knowing what the hell we were doing for half the time, I think it was such a fun and like exhausting and non-stop and frenetic experience. I'd definitely do something like that again. I did then get COVID the next week. Oh no, that weekend. So that would be less desirable. But, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Yeah.
Did you say swingers and roundabouts?
Yeah, if you want.
It's an alternate take.
JD, what was it? Was there like a highlight?
I think just the experience of running around, like, it really did sometimes feel like being in an episode of The Thick of It. Like, just running around with all these plots and schemes going on and, like, just being caught out because of either somebody else has done scheming better than you or somebody that you were scheming with has turned out to be an idiot. Like, it's like, just so many great moments like that. And, like, getting called in front of the UN Security Council and all that kind of stuff is just really good fun. But also, just, again, to cliche it, it was a good experience to do it for the first time. And also, I'm glad that we did it as a group, like, because I'm there with my mates. And, you know, I can occasionally, every time I come back to my table to sort of talk about the deals I'm trying to negotiate, I'm talking to Pete, who is a mate. Mm. And it takes away a lot of the sort of stress and the anxiety that I would have had if I'd gone by myself, or yeah. if we'd been in split up groups or whatever, like if we hadn't all been together, essentially.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. How about you, Tom?
I liked functionally throwing in the towel with the aliens at the end. I think I should have done that earlier. I should have embraced the Canadian route.
Embraced the chaos.
I should have embraced the chaos a little bit more.
Chaos idea.
Yeah, but I kind of want to do another one now, so...
Hell yeah. Just talking
maybe
about
it. Maybe
we
can do it then. Yeah.
Talking about it just like makes me think, oh god, that was really fun. I think my favourite thing, I think we've already talked about it, but it was just like having that little scheme with Israel to plant chemical weapons and then dob Iran into the UN was just like a fun scheme.
Really good.
And it was very good, but we could only have, like... In plotting that, you had to play the role of those people to do that kind of thing. And you had to go like, okay, right, so we really want to screw them up. But they can't know it was us. And it's definitely us. Whenever anything happens, it's definitely going to be us. But you can't prove it.
Straight away. As soon as I realised I'd seen you talking to Israel, I was like, I wonder who did this.
Cool. So I think we all said that we'd do another game as well. So
absolutely, 100%, I'd love to do another one with a bit more sort of understanding and experience.
Yeah, I think that was it. It's like when people said, "Oh, have you played a mega game before?" And then quite a few people at like our table put their hands up, and it's just like, "Oh no, are these people all going to be pros at this?" Like some of them had more hats on than I did. So it was like, "Oh, duh." Are they taking it really seriously? It turns out they just didn't know what was going on either, which was good.
I think part of the thing of them being experienced players is that they know what they're getting out of it. So I feel like there was never a moment where I felt like anyone was trying to game it, or anyone at least that I was talking to, or any conversations that I happened to be eavesdropping on for no particular reason. I never got the sense that anyone was trying to play it purely as a game. And trying to just,
everybody was no on one, the same wavelength, weren't they?
I never felt like someone was trying to screw us with mechanics. Like, yeah. I think it was very narrative, and that's exactly the sort of thing I like. And I feel like the experienced players understand that because they've done it before, so they understand what's the important part of a mega game. I'd definitely be up for doing it. Now that I've experienced it, I want to do more of them. Like, I think someone was talking about one relatively soon that is like, gothic horror. I can't remember where. I think it's in Newcastle or something, but that sounds really good. I mean, I won't be able to go to it, definitely not, because I can't afford to go up to Newcastle for a weekend, but I'd be up for trying all these different things out, like in different settings and stuff. Like there's one apparently that's been mentioned that's like the death of Stalin. Yeah, and I'd definitely be up for being a part of something like that.
Yeah, I think one thing I made a quick note to say that if you want to find a mega game in your area, www.megagameassembly.com is where you can find a good list of like what is going on. Most of them seem to be UK based, but I'm assuming that they probably occur in other countries as well. Probably harder to organize in the US or somewhere which is a bit more
distanced,
but I'm sure that they happen somewhere near you. So I was gonna like wrap up the conversation by saying, well, we're meant to be a miniature painting and playing game podcast and something like that. So what could us as miniature fans of Little Games Workshop war games and things learn from something like this?
That's an interesting question. I do think that the thing that JD just mentioned about playing without like the rule set above all things in mind is a really good way to approach it. And obviously miniature gaming is like a very different proposition because it's like 2-3 hours and then it's over most of the time. But I do wonder if some of that attitude could maybe be brought into like, you know, narrative campaigns or something. Mm. I suppose that's just a question of like expectation setting and attitude adjustment. Because I mean I used to go to this club in the place that I lived before I bought my house, and there was a narrative campaign that lasted a year, and like everyone was hyper competitive, like using complete meta lists all the time. And so I think there's always going to be a cadre of people who sort of prefer that way of playing no matter what. But I don't know, I like the concept of I guess inhabiting the mindset of the faction that you're playing, not in like a, you know, guy yelling in orc voice the whole game, but in terms of like the way that you do your actions in the actual game itself. But maybe there's less scope for that in a miniature game.
I think role playing it is an interesting way of thinking. Not, yeah, like you say, not shouting in an orc voice or shouting for the emperor, purge the heretic or whatever. It's more like making decisions that you think the person actually in your position would do. So, you know, make it so play it safe. You're, I don't know, playing your Imperial Guard army or whatever, making tactical decisions based on what, you know, an Imperial general would actually do, not necessarily the most optimal game way of doing it. You know,
I feel like the meat grinder.
I feel like having scope for that. That's something I try and do in my miniatures games anyway, sort of, like within reason. But yeah, it's something I'm definitely keen to do more of, like just try and role play it by getting into the mindset a little bit more of like trying to inhabit that position or that world in that way.
I mean, I came away and then immediately started trying to plan a narrative weekend, so that was kind of my general feedback was just like, we have to apply some of this to there. But understanding like the things that made the mega game successful was not more rules, was like having,
that's a very good thought,
value over the for actions, but that value wasn't quantifiable too much, basically. It was like, you could get weird stuff, you could get items, you could get interesting things. So I think that was something which I really took away from the event, and it was really positive. Like, it was a really positive thing. Like, when you took away things from the rules or like those off-table experiences, like the military game was like, it was a game, but everyone was feeding that game with like money and items and interesting bits of things, and then your decisions had to be made by like almost like the king of Saudi Arabia coming over and saying, yeah, you should definitely start a war, that's probably a good idea. And I'd just go, well, okay then, and then it was a really bad idea. So yeah, I think taking some of that away was like what I took, and then immediately started trying to figure out how we apply that to something horrible and grim and in the Age of Sigmar, apparently. Tom, anything which you want to take away from the whole situation?
No, I don't. Honestly, nothing really to add there, to be honest, because you've pretty much all covered it all. Other than I think, man, a mega game set in the either like 40k, 30k,
yes,
it would just be it would. Oh my god. Oh,
we should think
please,
about that.
Print money. I'm good
already,
grief.
Now that you've said that, incredible. I'm already thinking about it. I mean, I'm already. This might be off topic. Well, it isn't off topic entirely, but I'm already thinking about like, you know, writing RPG settings and things. So yeah, I'm definitely up for trying to come up with something along those lines. For imagine being like the council of an Azerite city, trying to deal with, you know, a chaos rift opening or something. Imagine that. How good would that be?
The thing is, if the question is framing is what you can learn as sort of from miniature games. I personally don't think a huge amount. It was very much more of an RPG than it was a board game.
I mean, it was just what it was. It was like I had a literal tabletop in front of me with units moving around.
But I think I mean, like as a grand whole, right? It's more of a curated RPG than it is a prescribed board game. Although I appreciate it was for you.
yeah, I totally take that. I think it was an awesome experience. So it was definitely something I'd want to do again. It's something. I do want to get more of it into, like, the feel of miniature gaming and wargaming and things. I think it's that thing that is sometimes missing from it almost, but without the complete commitment to the bit, I guess. Mm.
But this is yet another. Yeah. Have you considered narrative gaming?
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And it requires buy-in from everybody, and it requires setting of expectations.
That's it, isn't it?
And if you can do it, I guess what this does prove is if you can do it, I bet it'd be great.
I think a wider thing with miniatures gaming, particularly, is that, and this may be particular to the way that GW does things, but it's I think. The competitive side of it, or at least matched play, TM, is so like front-loaded and seen as almost the default that I think, yeah, it's worth taking a step back and thinking vibes over rules. Just getting a narrative going rather than like what's the most optimal unit that I can take in this matchup,
right.
What's the most optimal decision I can make here, and thinking, right, what's cool though? What makes more sense from the story of what's happening here?
Yeah, it does. Like the match play sort of thing doesn't allow for you to essentially take something because it's cool, almost, because you will lose if that happens. But maybe that's fine. But
yes,
also, like maybe that's cool with your opponent as well to do something a bit different or something. So. Like, they don't have to take a meta list against you. You can just slam your hammers together, as they say. Cool. All right. Do we have anything else to add before we start wrapping up the podcast?
No, that's the whole thing.
That's it. We just solved it. And
the entire thing.
Awesome.
Only other point is doing stuff with like-minded people is good and fun. The end.
Well, that is a hot take to end up here. Oh, are you sure you want to put that out there?
Well, controversial.
Cool. All right. So I did look up a few other places to get some information. So we've already mentioned megagameassembly.com. Find mega games near you. We also
hot mega games in your
hot
area.
Mega games in your area or near your area. There's also going to be a first contact 2036, I believe.
Yeah.
At some point, so keep an eye out for that on the website.
I believe next year,
which is verylargehugegames.com. They were lovely hosts. It was an excellent event. And if you can find out more, the Shut Up and Sit Down did a video about it in 2014, which probably makes us crumble into some kind of dust.
8,000 years ago.
Which
I believe was the precursor game, Watch the Skies.
Indeed. So, before we properly sign off, Pete, where can people find you on the internet?
If you want to look at pictures of my miniatures, Instagram/ Fienya, FIYENYAA. Or if you want to look at me arguing with horrible people on the internet, same thing for Twitter.
Hell yeah. And we're just moving into a period of political climate where that's going to happen a lot. So. And JD, where can people find you?
Again, if you want to look at pictures of my miniatures, what I've done painted, I'm on Instagram at jd.paints. I'm not going to give out my Twitter because
too radical.
No one wants to read that.
Okay, Tom.
I'm most places at TN Dines.
Nice. And you can find me at Alone Music UK on Instagram. Yeah, that's me. I can remember that. Cool. You can also find us at tinyplasticpeople.com. We will have more podcasts there, mostly about miniature things, not meaty things. And we will also, yeah, we have articles and other fun things there. I believe there's stuff in the pipeline. So keep listening to us, I guess, and not if you don't want to. You can also find us on social. That's the other thing, at Tiny Plastic Pals. Oh, and email us at thetinyplasticpeople@gmail.com. So there's all the sign-offs. It's very hot in this room. So
you got meat on the brain, my friend.
I have got meat on the brain, and for a vegan, that's a bad thing. So, goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
See you in a bit.
Toodaloo.
Adios.
Nuclear scientist assassinated by robot. Apparently that happened to us at one point.